From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Former international cricket star turned anti-corruption activist Imran Khan has declared victory in Pakistan in elections that took place Wednesday. The elections were marred by heavy violence on the day that people voted, with a devastating attack in the city of Quetta that killed more than 30 people. There have also been serious accusations alleging cheating and fraud. Mr. Khan's Tehreek-e-Insaf party declared victory early Thursday morning after winning a plurality of seats in the National Assembly. According to Associated Press, Khan's message of a new Pakistan resonated with young voters in a country where 64% of its 200 million people are below the age of 30. Khan's leading rival, Shahbaz Sharif, the brother of disgraced former Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif, is disputing the results. We turn to Junaid Ahmed, assistant professor at the University of Lahore in Pakistan and secretary general of the International Movement for a Just World. He's currently in the United States. Welcome to the program, Junaid.
Thanks for having me on, Sonali.
So I grew up, and I'm sure you did too, knowing who Imran Khan was. He was a household name among South Asians for being the captain of Pakistan's cricket team. And of course, cricket is something that South Asians take very seriously. Today, he is basically being declared prime minister, or has declared himself prime minister of Pakistan. Give us a sense of who he is, because it's not overnight that he went from being cricket star to and this international known person to running for election. He has spent the last several years being an activist and being involved in Pakistan's politics, right?
No, absolutely. In fact, his political journey has been a long and arduous one. And what the results, the astounding results of his party in this election contrast markedly so from the previous elections that he contested in which his party would, you know, he'd be lucky if he got his own seat in parliament. The past two decades, more or less, he has given himself himself to politics full time and to political organizing. And it also came, kind of erupted at a moment in Pakistan's history under the dictatorship of General Pervez Musharraf, where he was also able to ride on an increased youth political consciousness that wanted to see democracy in Pakistan, wanted to keep it and sustain it, which is why you had both the prior regime of Zardari and then now Nawaz Sharif, and now, of course, Imran Khan looks like he's going to be coming to power.
So this is also a historical moment in terms of the transfer of power in Pakistan, right? I understand that this would be the first time that there have been three consecutive democratically elected governments in Pakistan because of the history of military coups and military takeovers.
Absolutely. I mean, that's one important point to remember, that we're talking about a country of which half the its history has been ruled under military dictatorships. So that is the context. The, you know, even in these elections, you referred to it in the intro, there was a lot of speculation about the military's interference, egging on Imran Khan and supporting him. And that may or may not be true, but there's clearly the fact that Imran Khan and the PTI had developed a mass popular base in the crucial province of Punjab. And Punjab plays a very important political role in Pakistan. And so that's where the main contest was between him and the other main political party there, the PML, and of the Sharif brothers. And Nawaz Sharif, who's in jail, and his brother Shahbaz Sharif, who's the chief minister of Punjab. So I think that, you know, this was the moment after decades of Imran focusing solely on trying to enter the political realm, where he finally was able to do it.
And the PTI being the Tehreek-e-Insaf party that Imran Khan leads, what has his platform been? He, to the outside world, is being cast as someone who's critical of the U.S. He's anti-corruption. He's also critical of President Trump. And of course, historically, U.S.-Pakistan relations have been critically important for the U.S.'s role in the region and for Pakistan's stature on the world stage. So how do we express to an American audience what Imran Khan's platform has been?
Right. I think that there has been a lot of misunderstanding of actually who Imran Khan is, what he represents, and the agenda that he wants to advance, both by the Western media and political establishment, as well as even within Pakistan itself. I think Imran Khan, from the very beginning, had a very principled position against Pakistan's involvement in the war on terror, noting very early on what we see now, the consequences of that, that there will be only a rise in terrorism, massive hundreds of thousands of people will be displaced, and the war will spill over into Pakistan from Afghanistan, etc. And that the military solution to these problems is not always the best solution. Now, for that, many liberals and progressives called him, well, he's Taliban Khan because of these positions, which I thought was absurd. So on the one hand, he was very critical of the way that the United States has historically dealt with Pakistan and has continued to post 9/11. And that had really angered the United States and other capitals in the West. And on the other hand, he domestically, you know, was really attacking the main icons of the two political families, the Sharif brothers and the Bhutto family of the PPP. He first went after Asif Ali Zardari, and he went after Nawaz Sharif, and in fact the MQM, another political party in Karachi. So it demonstrated that the guy was serious and had the courage, at least, to take on these politicos, the mafia, the old entrenched political mafia in Pakistan that's so difficult to break through.
Now, the Sharif brothers, in particular Shahbaz Sharif, his main Imran Khan's main rival, said even before the election results were out that whatever the results were, he was going to dispute them, that they were just not, that he was just not going to accept what these were. I'm assuming he assumed he was going to lose, or else he wouldn't have said that. What do you make of these allegations of fraud and vote tampering? I mean, Pakistan is a very big country, 200 million people, so big voting population as well, and so, you know, the vote counting is a slow process, and as you and I speak, there are still vote tallies being that are trickling in. Is there any truth to these allegations of massive fraud?
Well, we don't know for sure. If the evidence is presented, which, you know, Imran Khan has delivered his first speech today, and he had mentioned on Thursday today, and he had mentioned how if there is any such accusations, he will put his full efforts in investigating if this has happened. But of course, this is also quite ironic because the same charges were leveled by Imran Khan in the previous elections in 2013, which the Nawaz Sharif and no one else took seriously, but were demonstrably rigged and not fair. But so there's obviously the possibility of that. But I think any serious analyst of the elections this time in Pakistan will recognize that that the PTI, Imran Khan's political party, was winning and winning pretty big.
Now, on voting day, on election day on Wednesday, there was a devastating bomb that I mentioned in Balochistan in Quetta, where you had more than 31 people. Not in Balochistan, I'm sorry. Yes, that is the capital of Balochistan province, where you had more than 31 people being killed in a deadly attack. The Islamic State has claimed responsibility for this attack. What does this mean in the context of Pakistan's elections?
I don't think it means much in the context of the elections. Now, I mean, there's been a few of these attacks, particularly in Balochistan, one in Peshawar as well. In the lead up to elections, often there are this type of violence. But you know, something like that. In fact, that was the second largest attack in Pakistan's history. That was against, in fact, a pro-government political party, a pro-establishment political party. So I think that this is just the phenomena of, in fact, the Islamic State making its way down to Afghanistan, to Pakistan, and basically its franchises opening up in places where they were not because of their losses in Syria and Iraq. I think it has more to do with that.
Right. And just a geographic context is critical here too, right? Because Balochistan is in the northwest frontier province, this sort of semi-autonomous region between Pakistan and Afghanistan that has traditionally been, you know, a place where you've had Taliban, Al-Qaeda, and just tribal communities trying to coexist. And it's also just been a difficult place for Pakistan's leadership to take control over, right?
Right. And I think, this has been the issue. And I think that we had the PTM movement emerge just a few weeks ago, this movement of the Pashtun, the Pathan, or the Pashtun population in Pakistan demanding justice and rights, and fundamentally asserting that they are caught between all of these different forces. The Taliban and Al-Qaeda types, as well as the state, which even when the state does take action against these groups, it does it in such a disproportionate way that has an immense civilian, quote-unquote, collateral damage, massive displacement, and so on. So that was something very exciting and inspiring to see, that the Pashtuns had come out, demonstrated in Lahore, and saying that, you know, we want to reject the way that this is, the way the war on terror is unfolding. And I think Imran Khan is probably going to be very sympathetic to that perspective.
What about India-Pakistan relations? So we've talked about sort of what may be going on to the north of Pakistan with Afghanistan. To the south of Pakistan lies India, the traditional rival, of course, and these are two countries that nuclear tensions have sort of overshadowed relations. What can we expect from Imran Khan's leadership in terms of India-Pakistan relations?
Right. I think that one of the issues during the entire campaign was how the very strong perception amongst Pakistanis, the population, as well as the army establishment, that Nawaz Sharif, like his predecessor, the Prime Minister Zardari, were effectively puppets of both New Delhi and particularly Washington. And they took their orders from there. They didn't really represent a real sovereign Pakistan. And even in this this campaign of Nawaz Sharif, this was the perception. On the other side of it, it was seen as if Imran Khan was some type of a hawk on the question of improving relations between India and Pakistan. But if you listen to his speech very carefully, he says that this needs to end, the blame game needs to end, and we need to have talks together. So I think that that's going to be crucial. It's just right now, the environment, both within India itself, for example, under the Modi regime, I'm not sure how interested they are in really advancing talks. And other than that, there's also the geopolitics of the region, in which India is becoming very much closer to the United States. And Pakistan is becoming much closer to China in response.
Right, India-Pakistan sort of foreign relations have often involved the United States, which has then tried to play favorites, play one side against the other. That's what the U.S. does. Let's talk about what the PTI, Imran Khan's party, that is likely to be the ruling party, what sort of economic policies they plan on bringing, this party plans on bringing to Pakistan. Obviously, Pakistan, like many South Asian countries, struggles with very serious levels of poverty. On its Twitter account, the Tehreek e Insaf party posted, "Our policies are to lift our most poor, our laborers, our farmers who don't even make enough money to feed their children properly. The majority of our children suffer from stunted growth." Does Imran Khan have progressive economic policies?
Right. Well, I think that Imran Khan is, At the very best, one may see, you know, he speaks about a welfare state, so a social welfare state. Sometimes they'll say an Islamic welfare state. That doesn't say much concretely, but of course, in the age of neoliberalism and post-neoliberalism and just the savage attacks we see in countries throughout the world on all these social programs, you know, that's a good start in Pakistan to kind of invest more in health and education and development, which normally has not happened. It's either been siphoned into corruption or to the military. So that is a good start. And he has emphasized that from the very beginning. Other than that, I mean, he's obviously, I don't think that progressives should have any illusions of him being a full-blown socialist or anything, but I think that he is certainly for more, you know, fairness for the in the rule of law, for holding the high mighty accountable as he's been doing, all of these things. Imran Khan has represented.
The party also posted on Twitter that as far as America is concerned, we want to work on a policy that is mutually beneficial, not a one-way relationship. There needs to be a balance. Now, Imran Khan has, you know, in the lead up to this election, been very critical of Donald Trump. I'm not sure. I haven't sort of seen any news about Trump congratulating him on his victory. Perhaps it's because it's not quite official yet, or it's just something that, you know, Trump maybe has also changed about the way U.S. presidencies work. But do you think that there's going to be much emphasis, particularly given that from Trump to Pakistan, particularly given that Trump is escalating the wars around Pakistan, right, in Afghanistan, and also, of course, we're seeing escalations in parts of the Arab and Muslim world as well?
That's right. I mean, I think that this is going to be key right now. I mean, Trump is going back and forth on this whole question of Afghanistan, for example. So initially we heard last year that we're going to escalate again in Afghanistan. And for some odd reason, he thinks that 15,000 troops would be able to do what, you know, nearly 150,000 troops weren't able to do.
Basically repeating what Obama did. Obama essentially had the same idea. Let's just put a surge of troops, and that's going to help, and it didn't help.
Right. The same kind of twisted, distorted logic. And I think, but now one hears reports that the U.S. Wants to meet with the members of the Taliban and so on, for some negotiated settlement.
We've also heard that before.
Yeah, exactly. Right, I think that in some ways Afghanistan is not really about Afghanistan, but why the U.S. is staying, you know, it's its longest war, which people should remember, longest external war. I mean, one can say that the war against the indigenous people of this country has been longer. But in terms of the external war, it's the war in Afghanistan has been the longest. And I think the persistence to stay there has to do with the strategic location of Afghanistan. It borders Iran. It borders Pakistan. There's China. There's Russia. These are actually the players in the new quote-unquote world order we're seeing that are that the United States definitely perceives as rivals, as potential foes, even though the European Union was the first foe he identified on his trip to Europe.
Let's also talk about where the military stands in all of this. And as we've sort of said throughout this conversation, the military, in particular Pakistan's intelligence services, the notorious ISI, as it's known by its acronym, have long played an outsized role in Pakistan and also in Pakistan's foreign relations. What is the military's position, as far as you can tell? Will this very critical institution in Pakistan's government allow Mr. Khan to rule unimpeded?
Right. This is the crucial question now. To what extent will Imran Khan be able to independently act and implement the pro-reform agenda that he has, particularly the ones that are helping the most downtrodden and poor, as he said in his speech? You know, one of the points he made in his speech that was really nice, he said that any country should not be judged by the lifestyle of its rich, but by the lifestyle of its poor. And I think that he is definitely committed to a lot of these social reforms. I think that the military will not interfere to the extent that it doesn't interfere with their, because the Pakistani military itself is basically a huge corporation, a huge corporate entity. And they have their own interests within Pakistan. So I think that the combination of both the internal political dynamic in Pakistan, in which there is definitely a clear idea that Pakistan needs to get out of this economic malaise, it needs to be integrated, people need to be educated and so on. That and the closer relationship that the Pakistanis are having with the Chinese now through the CPEC, China-Pakistan Economic Corridor. The aim, I think, mutually agreed upon aim of the military and Imran Khan is massive development in the country. So I think that brings them together. But sure, I think there can be instances where they could be an impediment.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Junaid, for joining us today, and we'll certainly monitor how things progress in Pakistan. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much, Sonali.
My guest has been Junaid Ahmed, assistant professor at the University of Lahore in Pakistan. He's currently visiting the United States. He's also the secretary general of the International Movement for a Just World. We've been discussing election results in Pakistan. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and now Instagram at RU with Sonali.